Welcome to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I am Tim O'Malley, joined today by the full crew, Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, Pete Sampson of The Athletic, and John Bryce of both Football Scoop and Irish Illustrated. And not coincidentally, today is Notre Dame's now annual social media holiday, Pot of Gold Day. John Bryce, we'll start with you. How do you and your loved ones and neighbors celebrate this blessed event usually?
I would say that it's the day that I spend the most time on the platform, like the Artist Prince, formerly known as Twitter, seeing where all the offers are going. I'm curious to see. I don't think Notre Dame intends to offer a 2027 quarterback with today's Pot of Gold festivities. I think Gino Gadulli's still doing some evals there. That's one area maybe where Notre Dame wants to see some more guys in person before making the offer of a 2027 quarterback. But, you know, it's a momentous occasion, T.O. I think that one, as we were talking off camera, and you guys have better perspective than me, but that one goes all the way back to the Dave Poloquin, Brian Kelly. I think Pete said Mike Elston days. So that's got some history to it, kind of like Auburn's Big Cat weekend or Florida Gators have a signature event. So, yeah, it's an interesting day. It's an exciting day for Notre Dame, especially the recruitniks.
We've been anticipating an uproar, knowing that there was not going to be a quarterback offer today. But, there, you know, as you said, JB, Gino Guiduli still sifting through that, and there will be in due time, but we anticipate that not happening. But, Tim, defensive linemen.
Yeah, there's someone on our message order board. I can't steal it. Someone on our message board said, is Al Washington the only one that set his alarm today? it's a defensive line heavy day. That's exactly what it had to be. I thought it was, before I noticed that, I thought it was an offensive line heavy day, which is, of course, what you want, because you want to get in on the higher ranking players for 2027. And Pete Sampson, you actually have a relevant Pot of Gold story, kind of an anecdote there.
Yeah, when I was down in Florida a couple weeks ago talking to the alumni club in Sarasota, I stopped by to visit with Elijah Golden, who's basically Notre Dame's number one defensive lineman in the 26 class. And he was recounting how Al Golden actually visited him while he was in high school, a freshman in Virginia, and was like, basically, we're going to recruit you, we're going to offer you, but we do this Pot of Gold thing, so just kind of sit tight on it. And Golden said, like, look, they kept their word. They offered me. That resonated with me a little bit. I also think it's probably a good reminder if you're kind of in the mindset of like, why isn't Notre Dame offered X, Y, or Z yet? Today is the day when they offer X, Y, and Z. And, you know, to sort of market it and brand it the way that they did, you know, how much that resonates. I think it depends on the guys, but you know, if you can create some kind of social media buzz in mid-March over college football recruiting, you should do it. And I think Notre Dame has smartly approached it this way.
And Eric Thomas dropped in a couple more notes for me for today. He mentioned Notre Dame Legacy will be offered today. Five-star Notre Dame Legacy matters a lot more. By the initials of JJ was the Notre Dame Legacy. And, of course, one of the good comedians on our board said, I didn't know Jordan Johnson had a son. So I got to give credit to the Four Horsemen Lounge right now. They're doing a very good job on Pot of Gold Day. But also, he mentioned, and I would not have noticed this, uncharacteristically high, at least historically, number of offers to not only Indiana, but Mississippi, which is an interesting. They're obviously going into trying to blaze new territory there, three or four offers to Mississippi in one day. So that's, I have a feeling I understand the pattern there, what they're trying to get a little bit more of a foothold in the South. And JB, that's, you've always kind of been in favor of that for the Irish.
Yeah, it's key. I mean, there's considerable resources devoted to high school football all across the South, and you've got some SEC programs that are being very aggressive in the portal, and Notre Dame has been very transparent, especially under Marcus Freeman, saying we will build organically through high school recruiting, and so you take if you're Notre Dame, you try to take an approach of capitalizing on maybe some guys at the high school level feeling a little bit left out from the local schools and get in there and establish those relationships very early.
Before we get to spring practice, go ahead, TP.
I was just going to say they've had so much success in Mississippi lately that, heck, why not jump back in?
I'm going to go a positive note and swing it to Georgia or something like that.
had a commitment for a real long time. In number of days, they had success.
That's very true. Well, that's fine. Swing through Mississippi, but you're right, Tim. Make sure you stop by Georgia while you're down there.
Stay in Georgia as well when you're taking that trip south. But Yeah, well done. I didn't see that part. I actually hadn't thought about that. Before we get to spring practice, because TP and I did a lot on this last Thursday, so I want to get Bryce and Sampson's kind of preview of spring ball that starts officially Wednesday. There were two selection shows, one of them for Notre Dame fans mattered. Men's basketball was appropriately seeded, I felt. Women's basketball, third seed. I think I'm tied for last on this pod as to say if that's appropriate or not, but it sure seemed like from following the season, there was some recency bias to drop Notre Dame from the 2 line to the 3 line here at this point. Would you guys say that's true?
I think so. I thought Notre Dame women's net ranking was still maybe 5 going into Sunday prior to the selection show. So fairly stunned by the number 3 seed as far as I can be stunned in that regard. But their wins are as good as anybody in the tournament. They did fade a little bit late, but they were still ACC co-champions and advanced into the semifinals. It's not like they lost their opening round game to Cal or whomever right. It was that they played on that Friday in the ACC tournament. So a bit surprised by that. And when you say the men were appropriately seated, I assume you mean planted on the off-season radar.
Ground is thawed.
I can't imagine anybody that wasn't surprised by Notre Dame getting a 3 seed because they were just ranked number 1 a couple weeks ago and they did play poorly. And I just think that, you know, I said it then, I'll say it now. I mean, I just think they ran out of gas, and I've heard several people now say the break will help Notre Dame. Theoretically, that should be true. Ultimately being the 3 seed, like I think I was looking at, are they going to be placed as the number 2 seed with South Carolina in that bracket as a number 1 seed? And you wouldn't necessarily want that. So maybe in the long run, maybe this is a little bit better. I don't know. TCU is sitting there as the number 2 seed, and they lost to TCU early in the year. But yeah, I think it's a clear recency bias, but it may work out well for them.
It does. To me, it just feels like Notre Dame to me is more interesting now than they were 2 weeks ago. Cause like the ceiling on this team was always the ceiling, but the floor, it feels like it's dropped the way they've played down the stretch. So I'm fascinated to sort of see what they show Friday, Sunday at the Joyce Center, and then moving on from there. But I don't know, is the draw, I know like even Dawn Staley was complaining about seeding after the brackets came out. So I don't know if anyone's happy with where they're pegged, but like if you were going to avoid South Carolina, that seems like a fine seeding, whether you're the 2 or the 3 for Notre Dame.
Yeah, ultimately it's going to come down to front line play, which killed Notre Dame against Duke in the ACC tournament. And so,
bench play. I completely agree with you, TP, and a cacophony of complaining there, Pete Sampson, because Lindsey Gottlieb was complaining as well, saying, I don't know if you can feel disrespected as the number 1 overall seed, but somehow we feel disrespected as the number 1 overall seed because they got UConn as the number 2 in their region or whatever. So anyway,
I can't imagine anybody feeling more disrespected than the Louisville men, but I guess we can address that.
Well, yeah, we have a few questions on the men's bracket. That's I also have my there's also that you know my theory of you never have down North Carolina or down Kentucky as your 8 seed because it's not fair to the 1 seed. Well, Gonzaga got thrown into that 8 seed role, and that is not what you want when you're a number 1 seed to get a team that's that experienced this tournament. TJP and I spent most of Thursday previewing spring practice, and on Wednesday we will see some dynamic warmups and also a few periods of spring ball. But we'll also talk to Marcus Freeman, so I want to turn it over basically to Pete and JB. What do you guys – we have access again on Friday where we'll start getting – we'll get Sider, Gadooly, and some running backs and QBs, I assume. What are you guys looking to see first spring practice? That is kind of the most fun mini spring practice until, of course, the open one on April 5th.
Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, I would say you're right. The jersey scrimmage is the best day of spring practice if you're a reporter. The first day you're a bit of a body count. Like I'm interested to sort of see what kind of offensive line configuration they come out with. I think that we know Steve Angeli will be the first quarterback out. Luke Talacher, Kennedy Urlacher. I would say mostly it's the offensive line. Again, it's not that anything you would hold Joe Rudolph to the alignment, but I'm just interested to sort of see the guys who are available, who fits where and how much.
Yeah, it's the line for me. I've been pretty pretty consistent in stating that over the last few weeks. I'm also very intrigued by Kedron Young. And then on the defensive interior, just can we noticeably see Sean Sevillano has reshaped his body in some regards? What do some of those other guys up front on the D-line look like? And just how does Notre Dame start putting those pieces together? So it's not a boring spring by any means. A lot of interesting storylines. But, yeah, I think mentally every one of us will have a bit of a internal countdown until that early April Saturday when we feel like we'll get to learn a lot more about this team.
So based upon injuries, I guess we can expect Joe Otting to come out with a number one unit at center?
Yeah, I think so. It would make sense in the spring because you want to give as many reps as possible to see if you have to have Anthony Knapp there as your – remember, they had to work Pendleton there last spring in August for a reason. They had to move – I'm blanking right now. You had to move Coogan at some point there because Otting needed size. Otting's a true center, and he's in his third year, so he should get a lot of reps. He probably should have anyway, even if Craig were there healthy, because you got to find out what you have in him. Sometimes shuffling those linemen, not that this is the case with Pendleton, sometimes shuffling those linemen can make the guys not want to stick around either when you don't have a position. It's tough when you're moved to center and you're not a center. No one has said, hey, that was an easy transition. I really enjoyed it that first year. It seems to be a really difficult thing rough for Mustafa.
Yeah, that's what I've always thought. I mean, it's just, you know, if you've never done that and suddenly, I mean, it's tough enough blocking the 320-pound guy in front of you on the interior defensive line, let alone, having to snap the football first. That's got to be a culture shock.
Pete, who are we talking to? Was it Mustafa at post-pro day or was it Coogan where we're like, what's the hardest thing about learning center? He's like, snapping the football.
I think it was definitely Mustafa. Okay. And he was bad. And this was pre NC State Hurricane game. Like he really struggled with it and then got good. I think we would all agree that Joe Otting is not going to start in the fall. So the guys that are in the running, like that's, the Lamberts of the world are more interesting. And then just like what they do at receiver, can you get at some point during spring practice, can a rising sophomore receiver make a play? They are like, oh, okay, something good might be happening there. And then certainly the mid-year transfers, not all of them are available. And like the fact that Stroman and Pauling are not is a kind of a drag for both the team and us. Just some young receivers, somebody do something that you're at the end of spring. You're like, okay, Saldate is the guy, or Gilbert is the guy, just something that, a guy rises above the group.
Yeah. Go ahead, TP.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, in that regard, Pete, I'm eager to see Cam Williams. He struggled a year ago. You could see that the adjustment was significant for him. So how much on ground has he covered in that period of time? How much more prepared is he now for the college game? And then Devontae Smith, just because I've alluded on the podcast a couple of weeks ago that there'd been some pretty persistent buzz about his presence and the way that he was acclimating to Notre Dame and just sort of the physicality and skill set that he brings there on the defensive side of the ball. So he's another one that I'll be particularly interested in seeing in person this week.
Pete, I was going to say, I think at some point, if we're in there at the right time, because obviously you have to be in there at the right time because we see such a small portion of the practices, but at some point, Micah Gilbert and Logan Saldate, I think, are both going to flash. And Tim, as it relates to getting snaps, not only will Joe Otting get a lot of snaps, but Cam Herron will probably get a ton of snaps at center too.
Yeah, that's the center of the future possibilities there. One more final note on Pot of Gold from Eric Thomas, and I hope I don't butcher it, but Ali Filetti Tui Halamaka will be offered. So the 2024 season saver does not get enough credit for that. I always said that about Matthias Farley in 2012. Peter Tui Halamaka was a pretty big reason that Notre Dame advanced in the playoffs and also made the playoffs. And I don't think we saw that coming when he was the third guy going in at Viper. Looking to upgrade your wardrobe? Founded by Notre Dame alum Go Wang, you've seen ESQ's custom clothing on the player walk and all of your favorite players and coaches. With more than a decade of making the best bespoke clothing available, ESQ will help you look and feel your best. From a perfect fitting suit or sport coat, shirt, or bomber jacket, or that perfect tuxedo for wedding season, check out esqclothing.com. and book an appointment to upgrade your wardrobe today. Mention Irish Illustrated and get 10% off your entire purchase. That's esqclothing.com. We'll be back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards.
Segment two, Burning Up the Boards. We start with a question from Spark6316. When do quarterbacks typically develop the most? Spring, summer, fall camp, during the season, bowl season, winter? Which of these are most crucial for their development, and when do you expect them to make the biggest jump? Based on this, how big was it for Riley Leonard to miss the spring and CJ Carr to miss most of the season / bowl? He actually was throwing quite a bit by January, but point taken.
Yeah.
I think it's the spring into the summer. As long as they get a high volume of work over the course of the spring, I think that sort of charts the course at the quarterback position. And then you hope that even if it's a guy who's not a starter, that he's still organizing stuff. And we heard stories about CJ Carr even doing that last summer. And we all have alluded to the fact that Riley Leonard said there was no comparison between CJ Carr as a freshman and Riley Leonard himself as a freshman, because CJ Carr was so advanced. But I know that last year CJ Carr hosted a cookout for a bunch of his freshman teammates and wideouts and things of that nature, and just started to establish himself and build a rapport with those guys. So for me, it's absolutely carrying what you learn and develop over the course of spring, and then being a focal point of organizing and constantly working with those guys over the summer.
Yeah, spring is important. I definitely hurt Riley Leonard last year. I would even go back to, like, remember how Sam Hartman looked at the beginning of spring practice and then how he looked at the end of spring practice? Like, that was when he made a jump. Now,
he lost his QB coach, too. He lost.
Yeah, he also came into spring practice with a heck of a lot more on his football resume than Steve Angeli, CJ Carr, Kenny Minchie. So I would maybe the spring jump doesn't, it's not an apples to apples things with the guy here compared to Hartman a couple years ago, but that's, I don't know. It's kind of all important. I don't know when it wouldn't be important, but I also don't think, for CJ Carr's point of view, that it was all that detrimental for a true freshman who wasn't going to play and then ended up not playing.
Yeah. I think in season, Tim, third quarterback, they don't develop much. So that would be the only time it's not important. Perhaps they go to the scout team and they do other things like that. But other than that, I think Pete's right. It's a year round thing.
Yeah, I think clearly it's all important. That's why they do it year round. But I agree with John. I mean, spring leading into summer, I think, is far and away more valuable, because you're getting that hands-on, you know, spring, there's no rush to get ready for a game. You know, I mean, you can open fall camp and it's like, oh, it's wide open. Everybody gets reps. But when they draw the line is drawn. You don't have to draw that line during the spring and then leading into the summer. So I think I don't think fall camp, like I said, it can be real brief for all the quarterbacks during the season. You got third string quarterbacks that are doing prep team stuff. Bowl season, you got a lot on line now, you know.
Yeah, it's different types of bowl playoff season.
Yeah, it's playoff season. There's a lot on line. So clearly spring, summer is the most important. And yeah, like Pete said, I mean, Riley Leonard missing the spring mattered. CJ Carr just not being able to throw for months is never good. But spring, summer stand out clearly.
You know, it's interesting, Steve Angeli, for Gaudule, he did mention, and I'm sure this happened because of the spring and summer, but he mentioned at one point in August camp, Steve Angeli was getting off his first read that he never got off of before. And they're like, oh, now we have something in Steve Angeli too. Because this was 2 years ago, so people can't like think this is prior, you know, during the Riley Leonard competition or whatever. But 2 years ago, they didn't know about Steve Angeli. And then all of a sudden, somewhere in August, but that's why they don't like to hear it clicked. It didn't click. It took the spring and the summer and part of August camp to get Steve Angeli there. We have a three-part question from Irish Fan 151. Considering the young roster, they all getting a shot this spring, who do you anticipate A, be the most physical of the group, B, the most technically sound, and C, the most physically gifted? Which is different than physically.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it covers a lot of territory. Most physical of the group. I mean, we're talking about defensive tackles comparing to running backs. I mean, Kedron Young is going to be extremely physical. Technically sound, maybe Cam Heron, which is why, you know, that was a guy that was Geez, I mentioned Cam Heron twice already. Early entry freshman, guy that isn't going to play for 2 or 3 years. But maybe him, because that was a guy that we heard impressed right off the bat. And I'm sure it was, you know, he's got a great motor. He's got that great first move. And he's probably technically sound as well. Most physically gifted. Help me out, guy. You know, somebody like
Kirby Lambert.
Maybe
Lambert. Yep.
Oh yeah. Like I was thinking more like athletic, like a Scrap Richardson or Elijah Burris or somebody along those lines, but Kirby Lambert. Yeah. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing Kirby Lambert this spring. And he's going to have a great opportunity to get a ton of reps with, you know, guys out across that offensive line.
I don't know where Logan Thomas fits into that. I'm not sure if he does. I just know that I'm interested to sort of see what Logan Thomas looks like in spring practice. And I also like is young, just freshmen and sophomores, guys who haven't played a whole lot. It's like, I realize Charles Jagasaw is a junior, but he might be my answer to all three of these questions.
I know we're not going to see Strowman, but very interested to see his level of physicality once he gets healthy, because when he was playing games for Virginia Tech, he was very physical, as is Devontae Smith. That's one of the great things about those two guys in particular. You know that there's a body of work, there's tape out there of them playing on the college level, and they're extremely physical, and you love inserting those kind of guys into your defensive lineup.
Yeah, I was going to probably pick Devontae Smith as maybe my most physical player, the one that I was anticipating being the most physical this spring. I would probably put KVA in that conversation as well. KVA, for me, might be the most technically sound and maybe the most physical that I'm anticipating over the course of the spring. And then Micah Gilbert's another guy that he's just flashed so many different times over the course of 2024, when we got a chance to see him, that how does he follow that up? And is he positioned to be a breakout player at that wide receiver spot for Notre Dame?
You know, my physically gifted, since I'll try to stay young, would be, I'd like to see Tay Johnson for a full session here, because they sure do like his, he runs and jumps like a college shooting guard, because he could have been a college shooting guard. So Tay Johnson, I think, and he flashed last year at safety. I don't even know what position he's going to play. He moved to corner because they didn't have any corners. That's why he was the number four corner last year, because he was the fourth scholarship cornerback on the team that could play there. So I wonder if he will be competing somehow at safety in that open spot, or if he'll remain at corner. Because if you're remaining at corner, as you're Tay Johnson, you're backing up Leonard Moore.
You know, maybe a Jadon Blair, who has great size, and a guy that played near, you know, maybe I'm overstretching here. I think he did his best work on the collegiate level closer to the line of scrimmage because he is physical. And we're talking about a lot of young physical guys that they're adding to the equation. This is really something for us to look forward to in the next few weeks.
Well, and I would add into that mix of guys I'm really excited to see, Adon Shuler, because he zoomed so far last spring and summer. Can he be Notre Dame's next All-America safety? I think there's that kind of potential with him.
Related question, Jim Booney, CRS. How close of a contributor is Carson Hobbs to being cornerback number three?
I like that question. I'm working on a two-part series story here in the next couple of days before spring starts about, you know, the most interesting or intriguing guy at each position. One position group, one player is what it's called. And I'm starting with the offense today, defense tomorrow. And I may have Carson Hobbs there, because he was put in a position where he had to be, if not a real contributing backup, to be prepared to play if he had to, and he did a little bit. But, you know, how close is he? I think he's very close as a contributor. The question is, how high is his present day ceiling? Because he is an inexperienced guy, and he's got two, he'll ultimately, you know, he's not going to be a starter unless there's an injury there, of course. But it'll be interesting. Really looking forward to seeing Carson Hobbs this spring.
I did a defensive back prospectus Sunday. What's today? Monday. Yeah, I did it yesterday. And I don't know how close he is, but he needs a big spring, because this is the playoff run for Notre Dame at defensive back. Three guys are gone. Three guys are back. Christian Gray and Leonard Moore, 260 snaps apiece. Xavier Watts, 255. I guess he twisted his ankle. I don't recall that against Penn State. Adon Shuler, 215. Nickel Jordan Clark, 168. nickel/dime Rod Hurd, 93. Every other defensive back on the roster, including the blowout game of Indiana, zero. So he needs to make a step because he was not a guy you were going to put in the game. He also had it tough because, remember, they had to move him to backup nickel. They had a glut of players. They were like, we need to move you somewhere. They moved to backup nickel. But the nickel was Clark and Hurd, and you're a freshman. No shot of really playing. So I think he was cast in a tough role last year.
At least he got reps there. I mean, that's always good. Yeah. If you're asked to play two positions when you're young, it's confusing, but it's beneficial in the long run.
And he did get to play in three or four of the blowout games there.
Yeah.
That was.
You know, I'm sorry, I keep jumping in here, guys, but it's too bad that Dellis Golden and Mark Zachary, the fourth, aren't here this spring. But I think maybe we might end up looking at this and underestimating the Cree Thomas was here, I guess, maybe depending upon what we see from him in the spring, pretty much naming all these freshmen here that are here early and a few that aren't here early. But you'd love to see the situation that you're talking about, Tim, where you're looking for those bodies. It's too bad that Golden and Zachary aren't here to start the competition.
From Arrow
Fan. Question from Arrow Fan. I got Tim. I'm sorry. Question from Arrow Fan 624. Any concern about the top wide receivers missing practice affecting the passing game for whomever wins the job?
I mean, it'd be better if they weren't.
Yes, for me. Yeah.
But, do you really need Jordan Faison out there to understand what he can and can't do?
I think you might.
Yeah, I think you do. I think you do without Great House Pauling and Fields. I think you do. I mean, he's not. We know once he gets rolling that he's a guy that can roll at that position, but practice counts. We just said it.
Yeah, it would be preferable. I think it would be far more damaging if those guys were going to miss the entire summer. So if you have one option over the other, to me, it's more important that they continue to learn tendencies and develop rapport with the quarterback over the course of summer when there's that much more time, when they're running the routes, when they're doing some team organized 7-on-7 stuff, as well as the OTAs that Notre Dame assembles for them. So not optimal, but I still think as long as they're together over the summer and they're healthy over the summer, that's really critical for the development.
I just feel like the quarterbacks could use rapport with the guys that are going to play next year, which is Faison, Greathouse, Pauling, Fields. So only Greathouse is there. And then it helps. I'm going to keep saying this because I think these are the two guys that crack the rotation are Saldate and Gilbert if you're going six deep. So I'm going to keep naming those guys until I'm proven wrong on that. I know there's others can say KK Smith, and certainly Cam can run.
Yeah, I think did he play X and slot last year? Do you remember, like, you know, obviously
I don't get, I mean, the practices they rotate well. I thought he was mostly slot last year.
Okay, so that's why I think KK Smith's in a position now that Chris Mitchell is gone. He's in a position to form a tandem at X with Faison. Would that be accurate?
That'd be nice. Pauling slot, Gilbert behind Fields at W.
Yeah, we know, and Mike Brown has said six is good, seven's too many.
He said he'd love to play as many as possible, but they never do. So you just don't play eight receivers. I don't think.
No, I get it. Yeah. Oh, of course you can't. Yeah. It's very difficult to do. I thought he had made a demarcation between six and seven.
Right, but right. No, he wants. Remember, he wanted as many guys in the room as he could have. So that's just the wide receiver coach that wants to play as many. I think it matters too if you play four receivers and three receivers more than two tight ends, because then you get an extra receiver in rotation.
We talked about it hurting Riley Leonard not being able to practice in the spring. I think that whoever, whether it's, the top two quarterbacks will be Angeli and Carr. It hurts that they don't have the top four receivers in the program this fall will be Fields, Pauling, Greathouse, and Faison in some order. So, I mean, it's not beneficial.
Yeah. I just stepped on this question. PA Rocket 21, with the lack of proven depth at tight end this upcoming year, do you think we'll see any more four wide receiver offensive personnel groups?
Go ahead, guys.
I mean, this is like more than five snaps for the entire year. So probably, but this is not going to be a go-to for Notre Dame's offense.
More three receiver, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is still and Denbrock is he wants to be 11 personnel. Like, that's not... Notre Dame's roster did not trend towards 12 personnel this offseason at all. If anything, they're more 11 personnel than they already were. It may be limited in terms of like the positional groups that he can put out there this season, just based on how the way the roster is constructed. Because it's, I mean, as much as we love talking about 21 personnel, it almost never happens. It's a question of 11 or 12, three receivers or two tight ends. This is going to be a heavy three receiver offense.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, we're bound to probably see a little bit more 10 from time to time, just because one of the last times I remember seeing it is Jared Parker rolled it out in the second or third game of the 23 season just to prove that Notre Dame could go four wide, but we haven't seen a lot of it, and Notre Dame is not comfortable in that. But I do think we'll see a lot more three wide sets moving into 25.
At one point in that year, they had three wide receivers, so they couldn't go four wide. 2023, famously on this podcast, they had three wide receivers that could play football, because that was shocking how badly that went.
Yeah, we've had questions in recent weeks about the tight end position, and it's compared to what Notre Dame normally is. You know, it's down a little bit, especially when you consider the Cooper Flanagan is going to be coming off an Achilles, and that's why Kevin Bauman, you know, super senior, right, 6-year guy.
Yeah.
I realize that isn't like he's going to be my most intriguing tight end in the spring. And that's not a quote sexy pick, because he's been around for more than half a decade, but a healthy Kevin Bauman that could really actually contribute is very important, because Ty Washington's not here yet. You know, Eli Raridan, you know, as we've said, he's going to ascend to the top pass catching role among tight ends. And then Jack Larson, you're always a little bit concerned about a slightly undersized tight end. So by normal Notre Dame standards, that's that's not ideal, but no, their roster, as Pete said, I mean, it lends itself more to 11, but that's only really because of the tight end position lacking numbers, not because they've got all these elite established wide receivers.
And I think I mentioned previously, but just to have an additional body over there, I do expect Justin Fisher to get some tight end.
Yeah, no, that's a good call. Yeah.
By the way, I was doing the tight end thing over the weekend, and I noticed, looked through some old notes. So this had to be the spring of 23, obviously. They only had Mitchell Evans, Holden Stays, and Davis Sherwood healthy. They lost Michael Mayer, and they had ACL tears on Bauman and Raridan. And I found a John Bryce story, actually, on Woody, David Sherwood. And also, I bring this up because Justin Fisher was a tight end, working with tight ends for that spring. So he has had some experience there. He was in all the practice reports playing tight end that year. And I did not recall Justin Fisher working at tight end, because they had plenty of walk-ons back then, too. They only have one right now. I looked at Henry Garrity. It matters for the spring. They don't have any tight ends.
They need Charlie Selma back desperately.
Yes. He enrolled in 06. He's finally gone. You got a two-parter here from Whiskey Jack 46 and ND Dan 106. Whiskey Jack wonders, what is the one football-related thing or conclusion that could possibly come from these spring practices that would make you feel the most confidence in this 2025 team heading to the summer? And ND Dan says, I know it's early, and he is absolutely right about that, but as of today, what do you think a successful season would be in 2025, and is something there in spring practice that can make you change your mind or more bullish on the team?
Have at it, guys.
All right. If CJ Carr won the quarterback job definitively in spring, it would definitely change my perception on what the fall could be. But I don't think it would change how I would predict the season to go. I would look at the long haul of that as being very significant. So there's usually, I wish that, I'm sure this question gets asked every year, and I wish that I knew how I answered it in previous years. Cause like,
it definitely gets asked every year.
My hunch is like very little. Like I'm trying to think of things that happened in spring where like, oh man, that changes everything. Or maybe one small thing about how the season's going to go. And I think it very rarely happens. The second part, I actually got asked this in my mailbag last week, and I said a successful season for Notre Dame, the minimum would be making the playoff and losing in the first round, which people were not thrilled about, but that's how I think that would be a successful season in kind of a transition type of year.
I mean, not making the playoffs is not a successful season.
No.
So, good answer, Pete.
Right. It's just a much, as we've discussed, it's a much more difficult schedule right from the jump as you're breaking in a new starting quarterback and other key new starters all over the field. So I would agree with that. I talked to somebody last week who was like, better be a return to the playoffs, like as you're gauging what the season should be. In terms of the spring, I think Pete already said it best. If you know definitively that one guy just takes over the quarterback position, and not that he is less bad than the other guy, but that he takes over the quarterback position, I think that that changes some things. And then, you know, staying healthy. That's one other thing. Like if you get through spring, and you don't have a single significant injury, then that's a big time victory for Notre Dame. And that changes because then, you know, you have some other reinforcements coming in like a Malachi Fields and some of these other guys. And then, you know, that you have some other reinforcements in house coming back from injury. So to me, it would be those two elements.
And even if, let's say CJ Carr, like he understands everything. He recognizes everything. We know physically he's going to be able to make throws, but does he really grasp all the coverage concepts and that and stuff like that? Now, let's say that happens. You think the Notre Dame coaching staff is going to say, oh yeah, CJ Carr is far and away the starter coming out of the spring? They're not going to do that. Although it probably wouldn't matter whether they said it or not, because if that were the case, and Angeli would be packing his bags.
Somebody will know out of Angeli's mention.
Yeah. Remember Marcus Freeman not naming Sam Hartman the starting quarterback at the end of spring practice?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Well,
Tyler Buchner left the next day, and it didn't matter.
Yeah, these kids are smart. They know, and they're going to know over the balance of the spring camp, like if they're performing well enough to keep it a competition or if they're performing to a point that the competition ends itself.
I have one other one. I got one other one. If you hear the offensive lineman and Joe Rudolph say, we spent this whole spring, we could not block Dawson and Rubio, that would change my mind a little bit too.
You're taking the word, you're jumping on me, jumping a gun on me there, Teal, but that's exactly it. But first, let me say that Samson said it's never, or it's rarely one thing. It's never one thing. It's never one thing because it's football. There's 22 starters on offense and defense. It's never one thing. But if there was, and look, the quarterback position, obviously, that's huge. But if Jared Dawson can't be blocked this spring, and if Gabe Rubio is bigger and better and builds upon some of that great quickness that we saw on occasion when he came back from injury, and we look at Elijah Hughes and say, you know what, he's going to help them this year. And then Jason Onyeh, it's like, man, his pad level's lower. He's really playing quality football. And that could very well happen with him. He probably is looking at this as like a new lease on his football life and could come back bigger and better than ever. So for me, and Tim, we were talking about when we had our two-man crew the other day, it starts with defensive line and offensive line. And for Notre Dame, knowing the situation at defensive tackle, if all of those things happen, and if Donovan Heinisch is now 295, although he's always said he's heavier than what he's listed at, all those things could make a massive difference. I mean, if all those things happened, they'd be better at defensive tackle than they were last year
when they were hurt.
Yeah, when they were hurt.
Yeah, we had a question last week about that. Like, how much of a drop-off is there compared to what really happened, where they didn't have Howard Cross and then they lost Riley Mills? And that's the reality drop-off is not as much as the on-paper one where you looked at those guys being out.
We have a question from Martin Evenflow. It's betting season. Over, under on the amount of players that transfer out after spring. Martin Evenflow is setting it at 5.5. What are you taking?
I'm taking the over.
Yeah, I'm taking the over. This used to be much easier, though, when the roster limit was so obvious. Although they're losing players, they're expanding the scholarships, so it's harder to say. But I am definitely taking the over, and I will never take the under officially.
what over under would have? What would the number have to be, O'Malley, for you to take the under?
Let's say it's 7.5.
Over. I'll go over. Yeah,
17.5.
No, I'll go under that. All right. Pete found it. I will go under. I mean, it's some guys just have to go because they can play elsewhere. Some guys have to go because they can't play here. Some guys have to go because they have to go because you lose roster spots. So it's over. Happened by now. I think there's like tryouts going on in the spring this year. They're over the roster limit by a bunch.
Yeah.
This is tryout season.
Yeah, it is. There are guys this spring camp who are fighting to be 103, 104, 105 at Notre Dame. Like, literally, like, those are the battles. And that's not unique to Notre Dame. I should stress that. Yeah. There's a bunch of places that that's the case. But Notre Dame is up there with Iowa, with Nebraska, with some of the programs that I think have great walk-on heritage. And, yeah.
Those walk-ons are taking jobs. It's the old, it is happening this time.
Yeah, and it's fierce, and people are worried, and there are walk-ons that are approaching this spring much differently because there's nothing guaranteed, and they want to be a part of that Notre Dame fabric with every fiber of being.
I definitely would take the over because there were so few that left.
Yeah,
you know, upon the in December. Now, a lot of that had to do with the fact that, you know, you're making a run for the national championship, but I would definitely take the over in this instance. And again, I think it's a reflection of number one, that Notre Dame was competing for a national title, number two, the environment that Marcus Freeman has created, and number three, hey, I'm gonna give it a shot in the spring, knowing about the 105 and all that coming up. And I think I would take over 7.5 this time.
Yeah, I think you're right, TP, again, because there will be, I mean, are you talking over 7.5 guys that arrived as scholarship players or just over 7.5 guys that will leave the team? Because I think for sure with the changes to the roster limitations and things of that nature, you would have over 7.5. That would be my expectation.
I was thinking in terms of
scholarship guys.
You know, scholarship guys. I wasn't thinking about, you know, after we'll start to look at things a little bit differently when we see which walk-ons are retained and which aren't. So we'll look at it differently the next time, having had gone through this one time.
I had this question because I like the handle. He is Steve Angeli, QB1 fan. So I think we know who he wants to win the battle. Fill in the blank. Notre Dame, and I'm almost regretted using this question, but Pete brought up playoffs, so we can do it. Fill in the blank. Notre Dame will make the playoff if this position group plays outstanding.
Guys,
I mean, defensive tackle, that I like, the offensive line is going to be outstanding. There's not a question about that. So it's like it's defensive tackle. I know this guy asked about like offensive and defensive positions. It's actually defensive tackle for both. So at like that position will have that much impact on how far the season goes for Notre Dame.
Quarterback. I mean, it's still, college football is a quarterback world. And when you say outstanding, then, yeah, if Notre Dame is outstanding, bless you, Pete, at the quarterback position, then Notre Dame is back in the playoffs because, again, that schedule is vastly different, and it's vastly different from the very jump with what we all know will be an incredibly hostile environment down in South Florida for a program in Miami that is in utter desperation mode as it opens the 25 season. So for me, it's quarterback. You can be really good at the defensive line, and you're going to be one of the best offensive lines in college football. But I think you need outstanding quarterback play. I think that's the next level for Notre Dame.
And I think defensive end has quietly become a really good position for Notre Dame going into this year, provided that everybody gets healthy. Again, this is never, it's never one thing. But certainly starts a defensive tackle. And, you know, like you guys said, John said, if the quarterback play is outstanding, if the quarterback play is outstanding, then we'll be saying that the wide receiver play was outstanding as well. And let me throw in Noah Burnett, because if you can count on a guy making 17 out of 20 field goals, that's going to win you the close games too. So it's never one thing. Those are the ones that I would mention.
Yeah, they might have been fortunate that.
All right, want to wrap it up here, T.O.?
Yeah, but Priester, I wanted to point out they might have been fortunate that Mitch Jeter's injury happened in a year where they were blowing everybody out. I mean, they did miss 8 of 11 field goals over a 2-month span. They just didn't need to do it, so it's kind of crazy.
I know.
I'm low key intrigued. I'm low key intrigued for sure by special teams this spring. Does Rendell take a step? And how does Noah do? So, yeah, but again, my answer is definitely quarterback playing outstanding.
Final question, switching gears. The Texas Connection, 1992. Name two round one upsets in the men's or women's, if you so choose, NCAA tournament bracket. We can, I made a note here for everybody. We will be back Thursday, so we can do our final four picks then.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have any picks for the women. I didn't study that, but go ahead.
I like High Point over Purdue. I think Purdue is really leaking oil at this point, and High Point, I think, has won 14 games in a row. I've looked into High Point too much.
to not talk about them on this
podcast.
To not
talk about them. I think they've got 10 players who average 13 minutes a game, and it's I don't like the way Purdue is trending right now. And so that one jumped off the bracket to me. And an homage to Bob Diaco / Brian Harden, Drake over Missouri,
yes,
would be another one that jumps out to me.
That one's very interesting. I like the High Point pick, both for how High Point is playing and if the women's selection committee penalized Notre Dame for slumping down the stretch, then the men's selection committee didn't remotely penalize Purdue enough for slumping down the stretch. So that would be one for me. And then the other would be McNeese over Clemson is one that I'm watching pretty closely. The fighting Will Wades and his strong ass offers of years of lore from his time at LSU. He's now apparently back in the mix for potentially the North Carolina State job, and been told this morning that even though he's just been there 1 year, DeVries is very much the person that Iowa covets to replace Fran McCaffrey. So then could that cause some musical chairs on the college basketball side of things? But those would be my two. High Point playing incredibly well. Matt Painter's sort of got the reputation at Purdue that they're either feast or famine in the postseason. They either make a run or they get bounced the opening weekend.
The always warm and upbeat Fran McCaffrey.
Not anymore.
That guy, man, I tell you,
he was also appropriately seated in the offseason.
We knew him back when as a really young assistant for Digger Phelps. But I love the Drake pick. I think a lot of people are jumping on that one. I would say Colorado State over Memphis because Tyrese Hunter is hurt, but Colorado State's favored by 2.5, so that's not an upset. Although they are the 12 seed compared to Memphis at 5. Maybe VCU over BYU. I don't think that's that big of an upset. Louisville. Look, I'm the one that's constantly talking about the ACC sucks, and it does. But if you go 18-2, if you go 18-2 in the ACC and then win the ACC tournament, how do you get seeded 8th? Good God. Not only do you have to play Creighton in the first game, but if you win, you have to play Auburn in the second game.
Oh, when you get seeded 8th, that one is a problem.
No, there's no doubt. But like, I don't know if you guys were watching the broadcast, but they had the camera on Louisville when they announced it. And you can see Pat Kelsey turn to his assistant and hold up 8 fingers, like 8 seed. I don't blame him. I'm the biggest critic of the ACC. I think there are at least four conferences better than ACC, including the Big East. The Big East would beat the crap out of most of the teams in ACC, but come on, man. An 8 seed for Louisville, I think that's pretty unfair. Now, Michigan won the Big Ten tournament, right? So, didn't they? They won the Big Ten tournament.
Michigan beat Wisconsin yesterday.
Right, and so I think that hurt Louisville seeding in that bracket anyway, if I'm remembering it correctly. But anyway, that's my amateur opinion on the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, mine is a very small upset, but mine is Michigan losing to UC San Diego because they also have to play Thursday, and they just went through a whole week of playing physical basketball. It's only a 2-point spread, so I'm not alone on this for calling it upset. And I like Pete's Drake pick. And as you said, Priester, I always like VCU, and it's VCU like strangling a team and BYU trying to run up and down. So I could be way wrong on that one, but sometimes that strangling a team that thinks they can just score with impunity. When you get in the NCAA tournament, those jump shots get a little bit tighter as the game goes on if they're not going in early.
Well, and Louisville, I agree with you, TP. You make a great point. I just looked up their net ranking, and they were 23 or 24, so you would expect Louisville would have been, at worst, a 6 seed, not an 8 seed. I will, however, say it's not fun for them to potentially face Auburn, almost certainly face Auburn, the number one overall seed in the second round. But they get that game in Rupp Arena, and so you're talking about not even barely an hour drive for Louisville fans to go get a chance to see this team that they've embraced and all season long had one of the best atmospheres in all of college basketball. And now they've
including
been
including in the Purcell Pavilion, apparently, JB, because remember, that was like a run out there.
I heard about that. And so that's a program that freaking loves its basketball. They've invested in it. They've been postseason starved, and they're going to get a chance to play Auburn as long as they handle their first round game in the second round with what I would think would be a highly partisan crowd.
They got home at 5 a.m. Woke up.
I want to throw in the fact that former Notre Dame student, great athlete, former associate athletic director at Notre Dame, Bubba Cunningham, now the longtime athletic director at North Carolina.
Bookstore like basketball legend.
Yep, absolutely. Looked like his collar was too tight as they were trying to talk about North Carolina making the NCAA tournament with one quad win. And you know, he had to leave the room when they made that decision. But they, of course, they knew that Bubba Cunningham was in the room next to them. So I just felt bad for him because he's a good guy. He's been in North Carolina for a long time now, and he's a really good athletic administrator, but put in a really difficult situation with North Carolina getting the bid.
Was it as difficult as when he was with Tulsa and they came to present Notre Dame a trophy and had to take it back because Tulsa beat Notre Dame? That was a rough situation, too, I think, for Bubba.
Well, and his son was John was a manager for Mike Bray in the basketball program and is now back at Notre Dame working on campus as well. So a lot of ties to the Cunningham family. And it's been a rough year for him between the way that the Bill Belichick stuff went down and he sort of had his purview over that search usurped. And now he's had the understandable controversy for a North Carolina team that has zero business in the NCAA tournament. And that has nothing to do with Bubba Cunningham being a super classy guy.
We'll be back Thursday with more free NCAA tournament advice you guys should probably ignore, but also our opinion on Notre Dame's spring football opening, which you should definitely listen to. We'll talk to Marcus Freeman and have about four or five periods there after watching some dynamic stretching. Until then, for
should
Tim Priester.
Should have an instant analysis after that as well, Tim.
Yeah, we will have instant analysis as well.
I'm sorry. Until then. Instant analysis. Yep.
Until then. For Tim Priester, Pete Sampson, John Bryce, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you on Wednesday.